Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You're tuned into another episode of Real College Podcast, Quarantine Edition, and I'm your host, Casey McCabe. With 2 weeks of online classes under our belts and October fast approaching, it is finally feeling like school has started in earnest. Here at Radio K, we recently hosted our back-to-school studio tour event and invited freshmen and upperclassmen alike to tour the K studios, however, in a far more controlled manner than in years past. In this extra special back-to-school episode of Real College Podcast, we sit down with the Disability Resource Center to discuss how their work has changed due to COVID, a dive into the university's policies surrounding travel and studying abroad, a trip to Sal's during bar close, a look behind the scenes into the recent Northrop concert series, conversations on devotion and dropping out, and RCP's very first collaboration with the Radio K Sports Hour. You won't want to miss this. Be sure to stick around. For many students, the Disability Resource Center is a crucial part of their success here at the U. During the pandemic, the work of the DRC has not only become more challenging, but also even more important. Here is producer Emma Morris with more.
I was recently scrolling through TikTok, as we all do now that we're stuck at home, and I stumbled across a video of someone talking about the app Be My Eyes, in which volunteers help those with visual impairments via a video chat similar to FaceTime. Learning about this app had me thinking about our very own Disability Resource Center and how a lot of the work done there regarding accommodations is done in person. So I recently sat down over Zoom and had a chat with the DRC's Cynthia Fuller, the Associate Director of Student Access. So tell me, how has the transition been from in-person to remote? I would assume it was quite difficult since it all happened so quickly.
Yeah, that was so dramatic. We did move very quickly. As I recall, it was we got the word still during spring break, and we had everybody take what they needed and their computers and stuff and go home. Some of us came in to facilitate some transition for a while. It, as you can imagine, we're a group of probably over 70 people at any given point in time. Mm-hmm. So parts of it went okay and parts of it were not so smooth. We all do different kinds of work. So we had to kind of modify our practices, figure out how do we do drop-in. And it was relatively easy to go to Zoom appointments and meetings with each other and meetings with students. But you know, some of the other stuff we had to work out.
After discussing the immediate changes as the DRC moved to remote, we then moved our conversation to the present, what the DRC looks like now. They have had the whole summer to think about strategies and plans for the potential of a remote fall semester. So what did that look like?
The first thing that comes up for me is thinking about changes from the student perspective, maybe. Mm-hmm. So one, I think of the biggest changes is that because we are all working remotely, our testing center kind of closed for operation mm-hmm. at that point in mid-March, and we haven't reopened. As you may have known in the past, we actually rented out space in the hotel, the graduate hotel, for accommodated exams. So we would rent out like their ballroom and various conference rooms and set it up for testing mm-hmm. And use it originally just for final exams, but eventually we were using it for midterms as well as finals. So none of that happened. So that is a thing that affects students. So what that means is we are in the business of working with instructors around what can they do with it, their technology for extending time for people. Many technologies make it relatively easy to do time extension. Now the issue of having a proctor, if instructors don't have like TAs or someone who can proctor. Last spring, I don't think we were very much involved at all. What we're working on now is how can we support instructors in that process. Are there some tips that we can provide in talking things through? We, over the summer, we did a few different kinds of things. And so we've also done some remote proctoring of exams And we can do that on a very limited base. We don't have the big staff pool that we did of student workers who really did a lot of exam proctoring. We have a much smaller group who's able to do that now. So we can do that on a limited basis. There are some practices around Zoom meetings that we can, that to get like the transcript of the meeting. For some students, that is an accommodation. For others, it's a best practice that facilitates everybody, but maybe isn't needed as a specifically as an accommodation. So we've included some things related to the remote learning environments in our accommodation letters. We've made some changes in those ways. We do a lot of drop-in with some email exchanges and then setting up a meeting as needed for discussion, and then moving into appointments when if people are going to be working with us.
Along with discussing all the changes implemented virtually, how could we forget about the one thing on everyone's minds at the moment? Masks. If a student, staff, or faculty member requires a different mask than what the university has deemed acceptable, you can contact the DRC for a short consultation meeting. Finally, I asked Cynthia if she had anything else that she wanted to let us know, and here's what she had to say.
Just to let them know that we're still here. We will work with students at any point of the semester, as we always have. We know that the pressures of higher education can be stressful, and that's a time when different kinds of disability conditions also are emerging. One thing I would say is that we recognize that change can happen in this environment. I mean, it always could happen, but I think this environment, it can happen maybe pretty quickly. And so we want to be flexible.
For Real College Podcast, I'm Emma Morris.
For many here at the U, studying abroad is an opportunity that they have wanted to check off their list. Here to bring us the facts and policies surrounding travel at the U is reporter John Cupers.
As a student who has always wanted to study abroad, I was curious about the current status of traveling at the University of Minnesota. I talked to Assistant Dean of Learning Abroad, Martha Johnson, to learn more about university traveling policies during this time.
There's a university-wide travel ban, but this time, no faculty, staff, students are traveling at all. In any capacity that's related to the university. Over the summer, we were preparing to hopefully have students at a few sites, depending on how things worked out. But ultimately, that travel ban was extended, and right now it is until the end of November. The biggest challenge is that Americans are not welcome or allowed in the vast majority of countries. And so hopefully that will shift over time. But certainly, in many ways, that was the biggest barrier we were looking at.
Looking into the future, I was curious what traveling abroad might look like if cases were more under control or mobility becomes possible.
One of the things we are working on, and with the International Health and Safety Director for the university, is extensive plans for different sites in terms of quarantine upon arrival, social distancing for any students that are there, differently than you might usually have on a study abroad program, different restrictions in terms of travel. So we've got a long list of things that we are putting plans in place and hoping that, for instance, perhaps a student can be going to our program in Montpellier, France, be living in quarantine housing for the first 2 weeks upon arrival, and then getting on with their studies in France for the rest of the semester.
For any students looking for resources to learn more about studying abroad, look no further.
The Learning Abroad Center, like the rest of the university, is pretty much so moved to everything online, but we have active open advising hours as if we were still on campus. Students can do a first step meeting, which is our initial intake meeting that we've always had, and that's certainly totally available online. But right now, we are actively meeting with students. Our advising staff, who are absolutely wonderful, are available for appointments with students, and you can sign up for them all online at umabroad.umn.edu. We are working with the Office of Undergraduate Education to allow students who are applying for the spring to also register on campus. That usually you're choosing one or the other, but the university has actually been incredibly collaborative in this space. And so right now we would allow students to register for both. We think over time, as we start looking at midterm programs next summer, we sort of feel more and more optimistic in the long term as things go. And so students might want to be looking now at those options. All of our midterm programs, for instance, are open for application.
With the current travel ban in place, Dr. Johnson went on to tell me about the university's virtual 4-credit internship program. This program places students with organizations all over the world. Over 250 students are signed up for this fall. I'll leave Dr. Johnson with the last words on studying abroad.
At the end of the day, it can be a great investment in your long-term career goals. And it's something that we really want to make sure that every student sees themselves potentially participating in. We do the work we do because we are really passionate about providing University of Minnesota students with global experiences.
For Real College Podcast, this is John Kippers.
Despite the university's policies regarding social gatherings, many students have been making their own decisions when it comes to their extracurricular activities. For many, this has meant the occasional or frequent trip to the popular watering hole, Sal's. Here to bring us a journey to Sal's at Barclays is reporter Annabelle Ludwig.
What you're about to listen to is an audio postcard from Bar Close at Sally's Saloon on Friday, September 25th. It seems as though everybody has their own personal gospel about the ethics of partying during a pandemic, so I'm not about to sit here and philosophize. But I do encourage you to draw your own conclusions. I asked everybody the same question.
First question is, how's your night going?
It's going pretty well. It's my 21st.
How's it feel to be 21?
It feels expensive. I'm not gonna lie. Yes.
What was your first drink as a 21-year-old?
Hey, Jack, what was my first drink?
Vodka Red Bull?
I can work with a few.
My night's going pretty good, besides the schoolwork and the college, high school roommates. Zeb! This was my class speaker at my high school right here.
Wow, if you were to speak on anything tonight, what would it be?
Yeah, you gotta ask him that.
Man, you've got like the conflicting like opinions of kids that want to have fun, but also want to like respect the safety of the people. It's tough. It's not a fair choice to let them give it. Right? Letting them choose between that.
It's nice to get outside.
It feels great.
But at the same time, it's also kind of terrifying with the amount of people so close to each other without masks indoors specifically.
I was taking shots. I had some whiskey at my place. And then we ended up walking over to Dinky Town with like no plans.
Yes, we took a little hiatus.
Yep, a little bit.
But we're, you know.
COVID-19, we had to be careful with that.
We
so.
Did. But
still masked up 1,000%, respect the CDC, everything.
Yes.
We respond to the 6 feet apart. That's the like difference is we can have a good time without drinking if we want to, but sometimes you just want to go out and socialize, meet new people, and if that includes alcohol. Right, we did. And if that, exactly, new best friends. And if that includes alcohol, then that includes alcohol, but like we don't need it to.
COVID regulations, Roger, too easy, bro.
Oh, this is a good story. So I actually haven't drank. So
she hasn't.
I haven't drank for like 2.5 weeks.
Yeah.
And I was not planning on drinking tonight.
No.
And the only reason that I really drank was because like I felt comfortable with the people that I was with. And like when you're comfortable, like, and you know that you're just like gonna have a good time, you're not worried about your safety, and like you have those people that support you, then it can just be fun and not anxiety. Like,
it's just anxiety. For fun. It's for fun.
I work my ass off to enjoy my weekend, pretty much. For the past week, I've gotten like 4 hours of sleep so that I could enjoy my weekend. It feels a little bit weird because of like the whole COVID and all that. But it feels good. I mean, I'm having fun with my friends.
I'm Annabelle Ludwig, and you're listening to RCP at Radio K.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Northrop and our live-streamed concert series, Amplifying Solidarity. My name is Krista Brogdon, I'm the Woodworks Director of Programming, and I am delighted to welcome you today. I first want to acknowledge that the University of Minnesota Twin Cities is built within the traditional, ancestral, and contemporary homelands of the Dakota people. We acknowledge the peoples on whose land we live, learn, and work as we seek to improve and strengthen our relationships with tribal nations. Today's performance is part of our Amplifying Solidarity series, presented with campus partners, including Radio K, Weeks of Welcome, Multicultural Student Engagement, and the School of Music. We hope you will tune again next Thursday, September 10th, for the Christopher Rochester Project at noon Central Time. You can register at northrop.umn.edu, stream live on Radio K, or watch a captioned version on Northrop's Facebook page. Thank you so much for joining us. And to introduce today's artist, here's Casey from Radio K.
On September 3rd, the Northrop Auditorium launched its 2020 back-to-school concert series titled Amplifying Solidarity. Although in the past I have attended these back-to-school events, this time it was different. I was the only student in the building, and I wasn't just there to vibe.
Hello, and I'm here to introduce DJ Keezy, a product of North Minneapolis who has been making waves in the Twin Cities for over 7 years. She is a curator of many dance nights within the Twin Cities that hold a safe space for the BIPOC LGBTQIA+ people, including the Clituation Dance Party that was launched in 2015 in First Avenue's main ballroom. Keezy was named City Pages Twin Cities Best Club DJ of 2017 and has shared her passion for music throughout the U.S., such as at the historic Red Rocks Amphitheater, 930 Club, and Brooklyn Steel, and has opened for established artists such as DJ Spinderella and De La Soul. And she is also the founder of the new venue in Minneapolis Aunties that was launched in July of 2020, a soon-to-be music venue that centers BIPOC women of color and BIPOC LGBTQIA+ people. Please join me in giving a warm gopher welcome to DJ Keezy.
After I introduced DJ Keezy, she broke into her virtual set, and I was swiftly escorted off stage and into the bowels of Northrop Auditorium.
You did great.
Experience in radio kind of helps.
Yeah, definitely.
Use a microphone and.
Yeah, and then when you trip, you realize it's like it's not bad. That bad is not the end of the world. Just keep talking, and most people won't really notice.
I'm not sure if my card will let me in.
Okay.
As the only student in the building, I was allowed to re-enter the concert hall from the back. Although this is the first time me and Keezy have spoken to each other face-to-face, it's not the first time we have spoken, as we had a conversation earlier this summer highlighting how Keezy came up in the Minneapolis music scene and why the work she is doing is important.
For me, starting my career, I actually, spent a lot of time before I even really got into the scene of just shadowing DJs, and all of those people that I shadowed were all men. And there was a huge, lack of respect, just not taking me serious as a woman. And starting my career as, DJing for certain people, mostly men. And once, I shared space with, shared a stage with other women, I felt how powerful that was and how, safe it felt. And I wanted to continue on keeping that space. And that's how I started, creating spaces like The Clituation. And before that, it was called The Fix. And just giving women the platform of even just seeing other women, that we can share space together, that we can take up space, and just the fact that women in general get overlooked and overshadowed as how talented they are and continue on holding that space. is very important and has been like my truth and what's important to me as a human. Mm-hmm. So like moving on and just like the way that I have navigated through the music scene, I also like still have felt, you know, like, you know, that you unfortunately think as a woman that you need to like depend or rely on certain people to get to a certain place, and those people are usually men and white men.
Reporting for Radio K's Real College Podcast, I'm Casey McCabe. For many students, their collegiate experience is not the linear 4 years that we all think of. This is the case for 2K volunteers, Annabelle and Zach. In the following segment, we will get to hear their tales of dropping out, life's choices, and above all, devotion. Here are Annabelle and Zach.
Hi, Zach. It's Annabelle. What's up?
Hi. Not much. How's it going?
You know, I always say I'm living the dream as almost a defense mechanism. But these days I actually do feel like I'm living the dream.
Better than like not living any kind of dream, I guess.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Right now it's kind of an academic fever dream, as you're well aware. It's the Real College Podcast back to school episode. It's especially poignant for you and me because we met yesterday at the Radio K open house and instantaneously discovered about each other that we'd both dropped out of school at some point or another, and we've meandered our way back. Can I ask you, are you glad to be in school right now?
I actually very much am, yeah. I never thought I'd say that, but I'm very much glad to be back in school.
Yeah, what does it feel like to be committed to finishing this four-year thing when maybe once you thought that it wasn't necessary?
It's really strange, like, thinking about it. Like, sometimes, like, I have a moment of realization where I'm like, oh, I'm at the University of Minnesota. Like, this is what I wanted when I was a kid. And then, I mean, I dropped out of high school, and I spent, like, 4 years just working and not doing much of anything at all until I went back to get, just finish a few credits and get my degree. And I did really good. It felt fulfilling for like the first time in years. And I did well enough where I was like, well, I'm going to try to do astrophysics. I'm going to try to go to U of M. Why not?
It's really strange to me how we always imagine that maybe our lives will look a certain way. And I don't know about for you, but for me, my life rarely looks the way that I'm imagining it's going to be. Mm-hmm. I find myself not wanting to tell people that I dropped out of school. Do you find yourself like embracing that part of your story, or almost more so that it's not relevant to who you are right now?
I used to be very secretive about the fact that I dropped out. Like, I didn't even tell any of my closest friends that I wasn't graduating with them. at all. Now, like, besides the age gap, I don't really feel the stigma. Like, usually when I tell people that, like, yeah, no, I had a long gap between school and now, everyone's really supportive. Like, it's almost like that stigma doesn't exist, and that's really nice for them. Like, I'm proud of anyone who does this, who wants to do this, of course. I mean, if it's not your path, it's not your path, you know? That,
yeah.
Like, someone who's experiencing any sort of similar thing that we have, it's, like, it's widespread. Other people have wild experiences, and it's just, like, timelines don't matter is my biggest thing that I've learned from this is, like, if you put yourself on a strict timeline, you're just going to make yourself miserable. Like, life is about experiencing things.
I'm going to get that tatted on my... Sorry, I cut you off.
No, it's okay.
What's the stupidest you did in your gap years?
Oh, God. I don't even know if I want to go.
Well, I can do mine first if you're scared.
Yeah, you go first.
My best friend Jack was studying abroad in Manchester, and I was jealous that I wasn't in Manchester. Mm-hmm. So I quit my job, and I bought a one-way ticket to London. And
that's
I had no
awesome.
Plan after that. No, it's so basic. It's like eat, pray, laugh, love. It's revolting. But that's finally what made me go back to school.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God. I was so off my ass, sitting on the beach in Spain, staring into the ocean, thinking, what am I going to do after this? And that's when I decided that maybe I should learn something.
I felt that. Kind of on a similar topic to that, I guess one of the stupidest things I did was, I was like, I've never been to Salem, Massachusetts, and it's Halloween weekend. I want to go. So I got in a truck, not a car, like a truck. So it's expensive already and stupid. And I drove 24 hours to Salem, Massachusetts, like no sleep, straight through. Didn't tell anyone. I called in to work while I was driving by Niagara Falls, and I was like, I'm really sick. I can't come into work today. Yeah.
Did you get possessed? Did you become a man witch? What happened?
I wish. I went there. I met some people. I had some beers. And then I drove, and then I left.
Would you recommend that people take gap years or drop out?
Take at least a gap year, I think. Especially
yeah.
if you're, like, a freshman. Like, don't feel ashamed to take a gap year. Take some time to yourself. You're young. Do stupid things like we did. It's fun. It's not smart, but it's fun.
I'm Annabelle Ludwig, and you're listening to RCP at Radio K.
Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, Radio K has been forced to operate entirely from home. Until recently, that had meant the death of some of the K's beloved specialty shows, like the K Sports Hour. However, it is always darkest before the dawn, as I am pleased to announce that the K Sports Hour has found a new home for the school year here at RCP. Here to bring you the lowdown on Radio K Sports are Trask and Grant.
Hello, everybody. My name is Trask Angel. I'm alongside Grant Sandberg, and we are from Radio K Sports. We are going to be doing a weekly installment on RCP for the rest of the school year, so we're excited to be part of this. Grant, what's our first story for the Real College Podcast listeners?
Well, if you haven't heard, Trask, COVID-19 has happened in the past 6 or 8 months.
Really?
And so we're going to talk a little bit about how the Big Ten has reacted to that and how they have now reversed their decision, and fall sports are coming back on October 23rd/24th. So, first off, to give everyone a recap of what went down with the Big Ten and COVID, they in August 5th, they started talking about switching over to a different schedule, only in conference. That didn't work, as in 6 days later, the presidents and chancellors of the universities voted to postpone sports, including football, and it was just done. So there was no hope. Then the other conference, some of the other conferences, I believe the SEC as well as the ACC, they kept on trucking. They were planning on playing and have played the first week or two. Surprisingly, not many cases of COVID on those teams, and they're doing well. So the Big Ten finally re-talks, and they figure things out, and now they've re-voted and changed their position, and now sports are coming back October 23rd, 24th. Football starts on the 24th. That's what everyone's talking about. First, I want to ask you, Trask, how has this impacted the other athletes outside of football, including the teams that have also been canceled because of the Gophers having to cut those teams?
Yeah, it's really interesting dynamic right now because you have teams like the football program who are coming back and they are going to have their fall season. And then just a few weeks ago, the University of Minnesota announced that they will be cutting a few of the men's sports, the non-revenue generating men's sports next year. So they'll have their last season this spring, and those include men's tennis, men's track and field, and I believe there's one other one. It's escaping me right now. But regardless, it's an interesting dynamic right now because you do have some of these teams and you have a lot of these schools that are pressed financially because they're missing out on seasons. They missed out in the spring. And so you're losing advertising dollars and ticket sales and all those sorts of things. And so schools are making really tough decisions right now. So hopefully with the return of football on October 24th, with the return of Gopher football on October 24th, that these smaller teams are going to maybe see a revival next year if the school is able to recover some of that money. But unfortunately, right now it's looking like those smaller sports, those non-revenue generating sports, are going to be cut from the University of Minnesota. And a lot of those sports have really long, you know, storied histories here at the U. So it's going to be it's going to be tough to see them go.
The gymnastics team has been one of the top 10, top 25 programs in all of college sports. And so, I mean, the Gophers, it's unfortunate they've had to do that. But I understand right now with no money, even with football back, there won't be fans in the stands. And that's where a lot of the money comes from. So that's difficult. How do you think the Big Ten made the right decision coming back? I think that they made the smart choice at the beginning to say, we're postponing. The science isn't there yet to say that we should play, which was the smart decision. I think regardless of your viewpoints, whatever science says should probably be the number one thing that matters. The issue the Big Ten had was just in terms of their PR, when they said we're postponing, everyone took that as, oh, we're canceling the season. Not true. They said we're postponing. We'll wait it out. What happened? A month later, they reconsulted with those doctors, and now they're able to play again. So I'm just curious, do you think the Big Ten made the right choice in coming back? And if you were the Big Ten, would you have done anything differently?
First part of the question, yes, I think they made the right decision in coming back. I did like the decision to postpone, not as a fan, but from a safety standpoint. I think it was a smart move by the Big Ten. They didn't have the right protocols in place to be able to move forward. You know, a few of the other Power 5 schools did go ahead and play, and the Big Ten now has taken some information from them. They have the correct safety protocols in place now, and so they are ready to play. So I think it's a good decision to come back. Looking back, they maybe could have handled, like you said, the wording of their communication could have been handled a little bit differently. They did make it seem like it was a definite move to move to the spring, not allowing for any opportunity to come back this fall. So they did get pushback on that. You know, at the end, it's all okay because they're going to come back and play. But it'll be interesting to see how the rest of the season pans out now with more football teams coming back, more fall sports coming back potentially, see how all this pans out with COVID and students on campus and everything that comes along with that.
So thank you so much for listening, everyone, on this segment of the Sports Hour on RCP. We're lucky to be able to be working with RCP again, and hopefully you'll be able to hear us again soon here on RCP. Have a great rest of the episode.
That's all for this back-to-school edition of RCP. Stay safe, Minnesota. We hope you stay happy, healthy, and connected. Signing off for Radio K's Real College Podcast, I'm Casey McCabe.